weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, thank you to Lottie and Dave for driving us through the afternoon. It is Tuesday, June 18th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Conan Byrne and Mark Langdon are with us to chat Association Football as Euro 2024 continues to entertain and League of Ireland clubs learn their European destinations. Hannah Terrell cast her eye over the squad selection for both the men's and women's Olympic Sevens tournaments and the Irish men's 15s tour of South Africa. While Andrew Bree has the latest from the European Aquatics Championships in Belgrade. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening, welcome along to the show. Before we get stuck into football, to rugby and to swimming, news headlines, and we will be coming to rugby a little bit later and talking about Olympic Sevens. And speaking of the Olympics, the Olympic Federation of Ireland has officially selected a sailing team that will compete at the Olympic Games in Paris this summer. Rio Olympian Finn Lynch will compete in the men's dinghy and Tokyo Olympians Robert Dixon and Sean Waddilove compete in the men's skiff. Eve McMahon makes her Olympic debut this summer, having qualified in the women's dinghy. Sailing is one of several sports that will be based outside the city of Paris, with the competition taking place in Marseille. The Irish sailing team has based themselves on location for the past number of years, familiarising themselves with the unique environment in this part of the south of France. Dixon and Waddilove are first in action with their competition in the skiff, running from July 28 to August 1st. Lynch and McMahon compete in the dinghy from August 1st to August 6th. Conan Byrne is standing by to chat League of Ireland. But first, Conan, it is competition time, because this week on Game On, we have got some fantastic prizes to give away, all thanks to Sure, the official partner of UEFA Euro 2024. And thanks to Sure, we've got a 55-inch LG Smart TV to be won every day this week. So, for a chance to win, all you've got to do is figure out which player we're talking about from the following clues. This player started his career at Monaco. He's the youngest scorer of a hat-trick in a World Cup final. He will play with Jude Bellingham next season. Text the word SURE, your answer, name and email address to 51552 right now, and we'll announce the winner for the end of the show. As always, RT competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all the details.
Game On.
Football.
However, Conan, before we chat Euro 2024 and who knows who that player might be, it is another big news day for League of Ireland clubs, because Shamrock Rovers have been paired with Víkingur Reykjavík from Iceland in the first round of qualifying for the Champions League. The hoops were seeded going into the draw. That it's the second year in a row that the Tala side have been drawn to face the champions of Iceland. They were beaten last season by Breiðablik in a disappointing European campaign. Progressing to the second round would guarantee a third round Europa League qualifying tie, as well as a playoff for the Conference League. Loser of the first round Champions League encounter would drop to the second round of the Conference. The tie with Reykjavík will be played on either the 9th or 10th of July. And then the second leg in the 16th, 17th of July, the Icelandic team will play at home first. So Rovers are travelling to Iceland. Derry City and Shelburne, meanwhile, will face sides from Gibraltar in Europa Conference League first round action. Derry will meet FCB Magpies, the side Dundalk knocked out in the first round last year. It's the third year in succession the Magpies will head to Ireland after clashing with Crusaders the previous season. Despite being unseeded, Shells will also meet opposition from Gibraltar in the form of St Joseph's FC. Their last European game was in 2022, when knocking out Northern Irish outfit Larne 1-0 on aggregate, for losing 11-0 to Sparta Prague. It's a kind outcome for Shells as they look forward to their long-awaited return to European competition. The Candy Stripes will travel in the first leg on July 11th, with Shells at home on that date. The second legs take place on July 18th. The second round draw is tomorrow, and Pats will also be involved in that one for the second round of the Conference League. First in the Champions League side of things, Shamrock Rovers obviously will have a point to prove heading back to Iceland, Conan.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult, O'Shane. Breiðablik, obviously last year they were defeated 3-1 on aggregate, and was a poor showing all round for Shamrock Rovers last season. Very disappointed. They'll want to make amends this season for sure. But coming up against Víkingur of Reykjavík of Iceland, they're kind of similar to League of Ireland levels in the sense that their season has already started, and they sit top of the league. They've already beaten Breiðablik this season 4-1, who obviously defeated Shamrock Rovers last season. So it's a very difficult game. There's no doubt about it. It's good the way that they're playing up in Iceland first to know what to bring back to Tala. But in terms of the whole European draw so far today, it's 2 out of 3 ain't bad, as the famous saying goes.
Oh, really? You would be quite concerned.
I would be for Shamrock Rovers. The other two teams, I think, should be playing Salen. Gibraltar obviously in the off season at the moment, so that takes a little bit of time for them to get going. Their first game, competitive games, are against Shelburne and Derry. I think Derry will be the happier of those two sides. FCB, Magpies. Obviously Dundalk conquered them last year, but they finished third in the Gibraltarian League last year, 17 points behind St Joseph's, 19 points behind the league winners, Lincoln Red Imps. So yeah, I do think that Derry, considering their experience in Europe last year, they did particularly well, only going out on penalties to Tobol of Kazakhstan, having had a great two previous rounds against HB Tórshavn and Coupes of Finland. They'll be in great form, I think, going into this game, considering their domestic form, like Shelburne too. So yeah, I do think Shelburne and Derry are in the driving seat certainly for this, but I'd be worried about Shamrock Rovers. I think they could have got an easier draw. They had Larn. They could have got Larn from Northern Ireland again in the off season, would have been great, and Panavesis from Lithuania would have been a nice draw too, but unfortunately they got the Vikinger.
Yeah, a tough place to go, expensive place to go as well for Shamrock Rovers fans. And Barry Murphy was on Twitter asking what Rovers' thoughts on it, and my first mind was sprung to it because I know Shell's got a guy, so I was like, pretty expensive city. But on Shell's, obviously planning without Gavin Molloy, who is departing to Aberdeen, which is going to be a big loss. And however, news breaking in the last couple of minutes, Shelburne Football Club is pleased to announce the first summer signing, and that is Ali Coote, joining from Detroit City, subject to international clearance, of course, formerly with Bowes. Scored a couple of goals in Europe, I think, with Bowes as well. So a good signing for Shells, Ali Coote, back in the League of Ireland.
Yeah, great signing. And especially coming into this European campaign, he was part of that Bowes team that played at the Aviva Stadium. Played 6 games, I think, in Europe for Bowes. And yeah, ideal signing. He was with Detroit, I think, and experience in the League of Ireland, experience in the Europa Conference League as well. So huge signing for Shells. I would like them to make signings in the defensive areas, considering the loss of Gavin Molloy and how important and key he has been alongside Paddy Barrett at the heart of the back four. But I'm sure we'll see something happening. I'm not going to tell Damien Duff how to do his job, Shane. So
Well, Shelburne's press release has said announced our first signing of the summer. So that would hint at there might be others. I know Harry Wood was linked with a return to the club. There's been a few other defensive names in the ether. But who knows? But you would say just a replacement for Gavin Molloy is not going to be easy to come by, to be fair.
No, absolutely not. And even trying to think of players within the league that could replicate his form and do what he does, I can't think of many. So
I think Galway fans were worried. Rob Slevin, I think,
I've been so impressed with Rob over the last number of years, even when he was with Finn Harps. Like, it was one of those players that, even though the team weren't doing well, he was putting in standout performances for them. And John Caulfield did really well to grab him, obviously worked with him at Cork City as well. So to get him at Galway, and his performances have been unbelievable, and look, the clean sheets speak for themselves, and that Galway rear guard, and he's been part of it.
Just for Derry and Shells fans looking at their trips, I think all the fixtures will be confirmed this evening by UEFA and be communicated with the clubs and with the association. So the draw is a good indication. I think that's only if there were any teams playing in the city at the same time. If, for example, Derry and Shells were both in Gibraltar at the same time, but they're not because they're different legs at different times, different weeks. So that is good. However, tickets might be a bit of a scramble, I believe, Conor, because Victoria Stadium is out of action. So it's going to be played at Europa Point Stadium, which is a rugby/cricket ground. I don't think football has even been played there before, so guesstimates are it'll be a couple of thousand at most, so who knows how many away tickets. So perhaps worrying times for Derry and Shells fans, but I'm sure they'll enjoy their trip to Gibraltar.
I'm sure they will, and considering the fans that are flocking to League of Ireland grounds as well, it'll be great to see them travelling their numbers to European competition, especially Shells, considering it's been 18 years since their last taste of European action, Shane.
Yeah it has. So good trips for the fans listening in. Let's chat Euros, Conan. Mark Langdon is also on the line. There are 54 minutes gone in the match between Turkey and Georgia. You were keeping an eye on the first half, Conan. A few cracking goals.
Did you know what, Shane? It's been the best half of football so far in this Euros. I think, like, I've noticed that there's been goals in every first half of the competition so far. That's 11 in a row. First time that's happened since 1976.
I enjoyed, you tweeted about that.
I did.
And then you kind of ring-fenced by saying, maybe people might be interested. I know Mark Langdon would love, I'm all over that stuff, Conan. Like, fill your boots with that kind of stuff, with those stats. So you've been entertained, Conan.
Yeah, I like those type of stats. You know that, Shane. So, yeah, it's the first time that it's happened since 1976 when it was only a 14 tournament. So, but this half of football has been unbelievable. It's probably one of the goals of the tournament so far. And Mert Mulder, absolutely wonderful strike from the edge of the box. 60 seconds later, Keenan Yildaz thinks he's made it two, but it's goal for blown up for offside from VAR. It was half a boot offside. And like the England Serbia game, Turkey started very well, but enjoyed clear possession of the ball. Georgia got into it then, a bit like Serbia when they went the goal down. They're like, look, we're going to have to come out here and grab something from the game. Mm-hmm. And Miku Awadze has done that with a wonderful finish. I think Mert Günok in the Turkish goal will feel like he could have done better for it. But it's been just such a wonderful half of football, not just on the pitch but in the stands as well. The atmosphere at the game seems absolutely incredible. And yeah, really looking forward to seeing the second half.
Yeah, so 55 minutes gone. We'll keep you up to date, Conan. You'll be arching your back to try and look at the screen and have a chat with myself and Mark. Mark, have you been entertained? First and foremost, what a stat for my friend Conor Byrne here. First half of entertainment all throughout the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that we've had so many first half goals really just helps the games develop, because obviously it means that one team is chasing the game at various points. And, you know, I think the tournament's been a good one so far. The weather, not the best in Dortmund. But again, I think that probably helps with the kind of the style of play and the tempo of matches. You know, sometimes you get these tournaments that are played in the summer in very hot conditions. So far in Germany, at least, that the weather's been set sort of relatively fair, not in this game, but even the rain just seems to, you know, help the ball zip around. I was also listening to your Gibraltar chat. I'm a regular to Gibraltar, so if you do need any tips, Shane, then get in touch. I'm sure I can point you in the right watering holes.
Well, any tips on the Europa Point stadium that I'm sure Derry fans and Shells fans have been scrambling about, this cricket/rugby stadium that people are trying to find out the capacity, because the national stadium is being done up. I think that's first and foremost, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of that, I'm not even sure they would know at the moment, because like you say, it's not really a football stadium. So we'll have to wait and see just how kind of it's sort of set up for football. We'll have to go back to that one. I'm probably better with restaurants and pubs.
We're off air at 7, Mark. Keep your phone handy, though. I'll put it that way. Conan, as Mark was speaking there, Turkey nearly went 2-1 up.
Yeah, Hakan Calhanoglu, the Inter Milan playmaker from Serie A, had an unbelievable strike from about 25, 30 yards, and it was a magnificent save.
Just swatted away. Half watching it. So
yeah, it was just incredible the way he hit it. It went right through the wall. I don't think that Willy Sagnol would be too happy. But Mamardashvili, the Valencia goalkeeper, did very well to get the ball away. And a lot of clubs are in for him this summer. Don't be surprised if you see him going for big money. But and you can see, easy to see why. After a save from that free kick.
No, for sure. 57 minutes gone on that one. We will be previewing Portugal, Czech Republic a little bit later on this evening as well. But Mark, just reflecting on yesterday's games, we were speaking on yesterday's show about Romania's win over Ukraine, and indeed Belgium being shocked by Slovakia. And then when we came off air, France defeated Austria, and a lot of news around Kylian Mbappe, understandably. And the French Football Federation president, Philippe Diallo, has said he's unsure if Mbappe can play with a broken nose. So Diallo has insisted it is too early to say whether Kylian Mbappe would feature in the remainder of Euro 2024 after breaking his nose. The new Real Madrid signing, of course, sustained the injury after colliding with Kevin Danso's shoulder in the match last night. Mbappe was taken to hospital in Dusseldorf but did not require surgery and has rejoined the squad for treatment, although his participation in Friday's game against the Netherlands remains in doubt. Mark, all these new fancy face masks and everything. Surely he can play with a broken nose. No, am I being too blasé about this, Mark?
I think he will be able to play. I think the quote there from president's probably just, you know, downplaying things and you know, doesn't want to get everybody too excited about how quickly Mbappe can return. I think the sort of quotes from the sort of Deschamps after the game was more on the positive side. What I would say is that quite often when you see players wearing a mask, they don't tend to play quite to the same level. I think it's a distraction. There's obviously some pain involved as well, and it will be a real shame if Mbappe is not able to play to his full capacity. Even Mbappe at 75-80% is better than most players, but you want at a tournament somebody like Mbappe to be at full speed. I felt in the that game against Austria, there were moments when he looked absolutely brilliant. He wasn't involved in the entire game, and he said that he's been struggling for fitness. So, you know, he's not 100% from a fitness point of view anyway, but there were, you know, some of the pace that he showed in particular when he missed the golden opportunity, that one-on-one, the way that he actually sort of created that chance for himself was a joy to watch. He was obviously heavily involved in the goal. France have got a lot of talented players, and their squad is as deep as anything at the tournament, but you still want Mbappe to be playing, and you want Mbappe to be at his best. So hopefully, even if he misses that game against Netherlands, hopefully he's able to play a part in the latter stages, because I think the tournament needs it. France have got players that can obviously do a job. Thuram and Dembele could move to the wings, and then you just put Giroud up front, or Kolo Muani, who had an impact at the World Cup's another one that could play a part. But with all respect, none of them are anything like as good as Mbappe.
So they play Netherlands on Friday, as I mentioned, and then Poland 5 p.m. on Tuesday. Mark, would you sum up France's overall performance in a similar manner of moments of brilliance, but a bit of a turgid performance at times as well, or is that a bit unfair?
No, I think that's about right. I mean, but if anybody sort of missed the game and said, you know, how did France play, you could sort of just say, you know, it's just been like watching France for the last decade, really, under Didier Deschamps. They always seem to just do enough, and then if they're ever pushed, more often than not, they're able to step it up. They didn't need to against Austria. I thought were a good test and played quite well, and sort of not like most international teams with the way that they press. That's not something you normally see in international tournaments. The fact they've got so many players that have come through the Salzburg system, I think, enabled them to play more like a club side, I suppose. So it was a difficult assignment, but just so often we've seen France just play like that, and they are a team that wants to keep it tight and then knows that they've always got that ability in the final third to play on moments, and that's what they've done. It's been very successful for them. They've reached the final in three of the last four sort of major tournaments. The one time it didn't work out for them was when they got caught out by Switzerland, and I would like to see France take the handbrake off and play more dazzling football, but I just don't think that's Didier Deschamps' way. He's just going to be solid. He wants somebody like N'Golo Kante in the team to keep it tight, and just one of those match winners just needs to show up. And it was sort of Mbappe, because he forced the own goal in the game. Maybe it'll be Griezmann against Holland, maybe it'll be someone else, but it's just the Deschamps way. He's not going to suddenly turn into Brazil 82, it's just not what he wants from the team.
No, he'll be certainly very pragmatic. Conan, Mark Langdon mentioned N'Golo Kante there, and I really wanted to bring him up, because it could have been a case for a lot of people out of sight, out of mind, and now he's just appeared, and there's certainly life in the old dog yet. He was exceptional last night, wasn't he?
He was brilliant, and I remember Wimmer went through as well towards the end of the game, and Kante had to get back and make an unbelievable tackle in his own box. And it just goes to show that I think Stephen Kelly was on commentary last night, and he mentioned it as well, in the sense that he missed him being out of the Premier League because how good he was. He loved seeing him play, and the fact that he hasn't been there, you nearly do forget about him because how good he is. Because it's not just what he does on the ball, it's more what he does off the ball and win back possession. And when you can keep out players like Tchouameni and Camavinga from the French central midfield, your manager what really likes you, and B, you're good enough as well. So I thought he was outstanding yesterday. And going back to Mark's point about Mbappe and the masks, you remember when Harry Kane, when he scored against Arsenal, whipped off the mask straight away. There's no way that if Mbappe scores now over the tournament that mask isn't coming off for those pictures for goals. But it's like with France, I don't know if we're giving Austria enough credit. I actually thought they played really well within the game. I thought Seawald sitting in the midfield was really good. Thought he broke up a lot of things. Posh as well up against Mbappe, he did okay. But when you come up on Mbappe, you kind of, you have to put in a good performance, and he did do that. And then Danso as well, I thought he was good at the back. It's just gone forward and where the goals are going to come from. Obviously, Gregorovic had a wonderful chance to put the ball away. I don't know how the referee didn't give a corner for that.
Shocking. Yeah. I remember that vividly. I was like, what is happening here? Yeah. I thought it was going to be a free out maybe, and I was like, well, there's no free there at all either.
The only thing I think is that he thought he dinked it over him, and that's the only reason why I thought he would have, he gave the goal kick. But Savitzer's touch before that, and he was very good in the sense that he brought others into play a lot. His 1-2 touch play brought Austria up the pitch, and I thought he was excellent. So I'm interested to see how Austria get on for the rest of the competition.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Coden, but you talked about the first goal being goal of the tournament. Well, Arder Güler has just he's just curled one into the top corner outside of the box. It's an exceptional strike, and I will let you describe it better when we might see a replay. Mark, were you watching this by any chance?
I was, yeah. I mean, Güler is somebody that's been had a really injury hit season for Real Madrid. He just came into the team in sort of the final matches of the league season when they were resting their best players for the Champions League final. And I think he's just shown in that moment why he's at Real Madrid in the first place. A stunning strike into the top corner with his left foot. And yeah, absolutely delightful. And Turkey have I've really enjoyed watching them in these opening 65 minutes, and two brilliant goals. And that one might just even have been better than the first one. And the first one was outstanding.
Oh, it was a crack. It was Marco van Basten-esque, the first one. But Conan, that second one, you've seen the replays now. How impressed are you?
I was trying
to sum it up there. I was like, oh, this is why I asked the questions, and yourself and Mark answered them as well. So I was like, how do I describe it? It's just an absolute cracker.
Do you know what I liked about it is that his head is still looking on the ground as the ball leaves his foot, so that his technique is 100% accurate, and he knows exactly where he wants it to go, and it's right into the top corner. It's an absolutely wonderful finish.
Do you know what? I'm disgusted because it's ruined my perfect segue, because you were speaking, Conan. I'm still going for him. I'm all in on it already. You were going about the corner that never was, and because he didn't see the touch on the ball. Perhaps if the referee had the old snickometer, he could have got that out, and we would have seen the touch with the ball on that, and that was going to pose my question to Mark. What do you make of this new instrument that VAR is using?
I'm not a fan, really. I'm not a massive
as a cricket man as well. I know you like your cricket. I was like, I'm just waiting for VR to rock and roll it then. That's the next step. Like,
it does. It just feels so unfootball sort of like, really. I mean, we just seem to be moving further and further away from kind of what football was. I thought that was really harsh on Belgium. I know by the law, it was handball for a pender, but it just didn't feel it. It didn't, when nobody complains about a moment, you kind of, in 5 or 6 years ago, I don't think anybody would have said that's got to be handball, and what a disgraceful decision. And so the snickometer just feels like that. We've also got the revs, haven't we? The RPS that we get. That sort of gets brought up for this tournament as well. How many times the ball rotates, and it was 4 for that Goulet strike. So, 4 revs, no snickometer from the Georgian keeper on it. So, it's not for me. I don't want to sound too old-fashioned, but it sort of it feels we're getting further and further away from sort of what football was and what football should still be, I think.
Well, Mark, we've had plenty of conversations about the football purists on this show, and Conan, I'm sure you're one of them. 4 RPS in that one, 118 kilometres an hour, the strike of the goal, 26. What's the distance? Metres out. So I was going to say kilometres. I was like, that would have been some hit. Hit that. Are you a fan of this snickometer, or is this just a bridge too far for all this extra technology?
Yeah, look, I was a big fan of VAR when it came in. I think everything needs to be done quicker and sharper. It needs to be just put into the referee's ear literally straight away. And this waiting around, it just kills the game. It kills the atmosphere at grounds. I think... Believe it or not, I actually think our own domestic league is having a positive effect on that, because of the fact that people are just getting sick and tired of the way football is going with technology. We don't have that in our domestic game, and it's just like, it's brilliant in terms of the atmosphere, and a goal goes in. I'd agree. I just Not the biggest fan of it, no.
No, absolutely.
I'm old school.
That's completely fine, as is Mark and as am I, so I'm all for it on this evening's show. As George, I've just hit the crossbar. Credit to our producer Ronan, who's doing somersaults in the gallery here, who's drawn my attention to it. So it is 70 minutes played in this match. Turkey 2, Georgia 1. Mark Langdon, I'll come to you. You might have been watching this. He's Dennis Bergkamp did nearly. This is exceptional stuff, Mark. So do your best to describe this for radio.
Yeah, so there was a brilliant 1-2. I couldn't see which player it was, but it was a brilliant 1-2. And then the Georgian midfielder sort of dribbled past two players, took it in his stride, and actually he's got a 1-on-1 against the goalkeeper, lifted it over the goalkeeper, but it's hit the crossbar, and the stats are just coming up. We've already had, that was the 30th attempt on goal in this game in the 70 minutes. So we've had I would say game of the tournament so far. It's been a joy to watch, really, from the first minute. I wasn't expecting much from that game. You look at some fixtures, don't you? You go, maybe this is not going to be the best one, but actually, complete opposite. I still can't see which player it was. I don't know, somebody there can help.
Conan, you've been keeping an eye.
Yeah, Kokarashvili, the Levante midfielder. Yeah, he just managed to get through. As you said, it was a great 1-2, and he just a little dink over the keeper, but just too much on it to hit the bar. So, yeah, very unlucky from Georgia, because they've both halves now they've come from behind, and it was unlucky that they didn't get the equaliser there, because they've really gone for it now.
Cracking match. You're going to be keeping an eye on this one for us, Conan. But just before we let you go, Mark, just a word on this evening's match, Portugal, Czech Republic. A lot of people would expect Portugal to win, but we've already seen upsets with Slovakia, perhaps Romania as well. How do you see this one playing out, Mark?
Yeah, I'm excited to see Portugal. I think they've got the potential to go very well in this competition. Look at the talent they've got in the team: Bernardo Silva, Paulinho, Bruno Fernandes as a midfield sort of trio. The big question mark is Cristiano Ronaldo, 39. Is he going to deliver? And if he doesn't deliver, has Roberto Martinez got the guts to drop him and bring in, whether it's João Felix or Gonçalo Ramos or Rafael Leão, and just change the team around? Can he do that if that Ronaldo doesn't perform? I'm not sure it is the answer, but I think they've got a lot of things that you would need to win a tournament. Solid defence, creativity in midfield, goals up front. Is Martinez able to sort of make those big calls if he needs to?
Okay, good stuff. We'll leave the conversation with yourself, Mark, there for now. I'll be in touch about Gibraltar, don't you worry. Thanks for taking the call this evening. Conan, just before we take a short break, you are going to stick around, keep an eye on Turkey, Georgia. I've compared the first goal to Marco van Basten. There's nearly been a Dennis Bergkamp. Am I right in saying there's nearly been a Conan Byrne?
Oh, yes.
Near from the halfway line.
Yeah, very unlucky by Ayan. Yeah, the Turkish midfielder. Thanks for bringing that up again. Any chance you can, Shane, just keep mentioning it, you know. But yeah, not everybody can do it, though. That's the only thing.
They can't pull it off. It remains 2-1. Conan, we will be coming back to rugby, but up next we're going to chat. Coming back to football. Up next we're going to chat rugby. Before we do take a break, Mark English has set a new Irish record and qualified for his third Olympic Games after running the 800 metres in 1:44.69 in Finland. The Donegal man took 0.02 off a second off his own previous national record to finish second in the Paavo Nurmi Games behind world indoor silver medalist Andreas Kramer, and was inside the automatic Olympic qualifying standard. So very well done to Mark English. We're taking a short break. Hannah Turrell is with us next on Rugby.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now, Hannah Turrell joins us to chat rugby because Ireland head coach Andy Farrell has named three uncapped players in his squad for next month's tour of South Africa, with Leinster's Sam Prendergast, Jamie Osborne, and Ulster's Cormac Izachukwu all included. It's a first call-up for out-half Prendergast, who was part of the extended training panel in the lead-up to the Six Nations, while Osborne has been a regular in Ireland squads for more than a year, but is yet to make a debut. For Izzy, the Ulster star is the real bolter in the group, with the Ulster lock and flanker excelling in Richie Murphy's side in the second half of the season. Jemison Gibson-Park has been ruled out of the tour due to a hamstring injury, while Leinster teammate Jack Conan will also sit out the test series for personal reasons. And the full squad is on the RT Sport website. Hannah, first and foremost, what was your general reaction to this squad named by Andy Farrell?
A little bit of, I suppose, shock and surprise, seeing particularly, obviously, seeing Izzy in there. But bit of par for the course in some ways, that he's rewarding some players who've been in some incredible form, and Cormac came good for Ulster towards the end of the season. But, you know, a fairly good squad with obviously a core group of very experienced players, but he's building that youthful kind of group around him. And so the likes of Izzy and Jamie Osborne and obviously Sam Prendergast have huge potential and have shown glimpses over the course of the season of why they should be in there. And, you know, they all could have some great futures for Ireland.
What's the mentality going to be like? Because on yesterday's show, now I'm not comparing it to Rory McIlroy, but Remy Burns was kind of saying it's going to be interesting to see how he'll react from the disappointment now going forward. So for these players, particularly for the Leinster and Munster players coming off the disappointment of the season, they're going to have a point to prove in an Ireland shirt, but also will there be any hangover of that disappointment?
I would see it as it's a good opportunity to kind of get over it and have something else to focus on and look forward to. And obviously representing your country is always a very huge, it's always a huge honour and a proud moment for these guys. So they'd be looking to try and almost forget that disappointing season for both teams and try and put in some good performances in a green jersey.
Mm. Will that as a whole then be extra motivation? Because even for Ireland, how the World Cup ended and everything, they'll want a good showing, and it's not going to be easy going down to South Africa.
No, absolutely not. I think it's a huge challenge, but it's a really good one. You're going to the current World Cup holders, you know, and I suppose there's probably been a bit of a rivalry created over the last number of years between Ireland and South Africa, and some back and forth from different players, you know, after that World Cup. And so I think it's a great opportunity for these players to go out, show the potential and the depth that this Irish squad has, you know. And there's, as you say, Jack Crowley at 10 has been putting in some really good performances for club and country over the last year. But Sam Prendergast will be licking his lips, hoping to try and get some minutes in there and show what he can do. So it should be really, really exciting to watch.
How far off is Sam from really worrying, Jack, do you think?
I think there's a little bit of a gap right there. Jack has shown he can control games in the big moments. You know, he's very calm, cool and collected, and obviously he's played an awful lot more than what Sam has this year. But there's no doubt that Sam has that little bit of class that kind of oozes out. He's a running threat. He's a big physical guy. You know, he's a great kicker as well, as we've seen. And he brings an awful lot more. He's very similar to Jack in some ways, I would think. And there's a huge battle there. What a great opportunity we have here for two potentially world-class out-halves to have for Ireland for the next decade or so.
I mentioned at the start of our chat kind of the news bit is Sam, Jamie and indeed Cormac as well. Are there any other players who are unlucky to miss out on? And also on the flip side of that, is important to have that cohesion among the group still?
I think Shane Daly is incredibly unlucky to miss out, particularly obviously with missing Hugo Keenan for this summer series. You know, I think Shane Daly's put in some fantastic performances for Munster. He's been very consistent, you know, can play fullback or on the wing. And I thought he might have kind of been given the nod in there to kind of show what he's about. And I think he's very unfortunate. But I suppose when you have the likes of Kieran Frawley and Jimmy O'Brien, who are very, very versatile, and then, you know, Jacob Stocktail coming back into form and Jordan Larmour, it's very, very hard in that back three position. But, you know, with no Mac Hansen and no Hugo Keenan, I really thought he might sneak in there to show Farrell what he can do.
Okay, you mentioned Hugo Keenan, actually, of course, is with the Ireland men's sevens squad for the Olympic Games, and I want to pick your brains on the sevens as well. But before I get your thoughts, we can hear from both the men's and women's captain, Harry McNulty. But first, Lucy Rock.
Yeah, as a young kid, I never ever would have dreamed that I would have went to the Olympics, let alone captain my country there. So it's amazing, and I take the honour very seriously, especially on behalf of the squad and the girls that I've known for so long now. Yes, we want to perform. I think that's been the big benefit of qualifying the year beforehand, and this year we've seen how, although we weren't consistent throughout the whole season, we managed to get a gold medal in Perth for the first time ever. So that shows our ability, and same as the men's squad, we can go there with real hopes of a medal. So we just want to be able to perform and put sevens on the stage for the whole country to see. Watching the athletics last week, like, it's so inspiring, and to consider yourself a teammate alongside some of those incredible athletes and be representing Ireland as an Olympian is absolutely massive. Like, the whole country tunes in, and it's the pinnacle of sport, really, playing the Olympics. So it's amazing to think that Irish women's sevens team can be a part of that.
Yeah, I was obviously in Tokyo before and was a part of that team, but now to be able to be the captain of the side is huge for me and my family, and something that I think in years to come I'll look back even more fondly on. But at the moment, it's a privilege, an honour, and it's been a great group of guys that I've been able to lead for the year, but they make my job pretty easy. We've had a really big year. We have so much competition within the squad. We've had guys in and out of tournaments and then injury as well. So I think it's a really horrible thing to be able to have to make a call on certain guys, and it's not easy for the staff members involved, and not easy for some of the other guys that are on the wrong side of that decision. But I think everybody's pushed so hard. They've really put themselves in an amazing place, and we finished the best we've ever finished as a team, second in the world, and I think that's credit to everybody that's involved in the squad. So I feel for all those guys who didn't get the nod, but we're still a couple of weeks out and there's a lot that can happen within training, and we still have another tournament and a training camp. So just as long as those guys can keep the head and keep training, keep pushing us, you never know what might happen. And hopefully we go with the best squad we can to France, and we're all looking forward to it. But yeah, it is tough.
So that was Harry McNulty, the Irish men's captain, and Lucy Rock, the Irish women's captain, but in the sevens game. Speaking to RT Sports, Paul O'Flynn, if we begin with Harry, who we heard from there most recently, Hannah, and the expectations for this group going into the Olympics, would they be high?
Yeah, absolutely. Ireland have showed that they can compete with the world's best. You know, they finished second on the World Series this year, which is an incredible achievement. And you know, they were the most consistent team on the series, and to be honest, they were only pipped by Argentina by a couple of points in the very last tournament. And they have an incredible squad, very, very well balanced. You know, they have some obviously speedsters, they have some players with great footwork and finishing ability, but they also then have the workhorses like the Harry McNulty and the Zach Ward and Jack Kelly, who will get Ireland into these really good positions to let the finishers flourish and do what they do best. And there's a massive, massive opportunity here for a medal for both these sides. But the men's team this year have really kind of found form that we probably haven't seen on a consistent basis in previous years.
Yeah, both Hugo Keenan and Andrew Smith have been included in the Ireland men's sevens. And it's been a lot of focus on Hugo Keenan in particular, whether it was the right decision or the wrong decision. Some people unhappy that, it could have been different for Leinster. Some people obviously then saying, listen, he's an opportunity to win an Olympic medal, which is an unbelievable opportunity as well. How do you think all of the attention might affect Hugo's game?
I don't think it'll affect him too much. He's not one to really get bogged down in all of that. And to be honest, he's always been a huge, huge player for the Ireland Sevens team when he was involved back for the 2018 World Cup. You know, he was the guy making all the tackles, kind of putting in all that hard work to allow other players like Jimmy O'Brien and Jordan Conroy to flourish. And for him, he's a very, very composed guy. We saw that, you know, even when he only had a couple of Irish men's 15s caps under his belt, you know, he was well able to deal with the pressure that came with it. So I think he's a massive addition to the squad. Yes, it's probably a little bit harsh on other guys who've been around, but he's a player I'd take in a heartbeat.
Mm. As a former Ireland Sevens and 15s player yourself, is it frustrating seeing some of the discourse surrounding Hugo Keenan and the decision to move from the focusing on Leinster onto the Ireland Sevens campaign?
Look, I think for a lot of people who maybe would have most of their focus on the 15th season and kind of see this as a distraction per se to maybe Leinster season and feel like they could have done with him last weekend. For me, no. As I said, I think he's a huge addition to the squad. He's a very, very humble guy who's willing to work hard and put in the effort and do what it takes to help that team win. And, you know, he obviously was one of the lucky ones to be selected. And I think he could be the difference between Ireland getting a medal or not. Himself and Andrew Smith are massive additions. And Andrew obviously was involved in the sevens up until last year, you know, and helped the team actually qualify for the Olympics. So it is great to see them kind of get rewarded for their hard works in previous seasons.
So the men's tournament takes place July 24th to 27th. The women's tournament takes place from July 28th to July 30th, with the pool draws for the tournaments to take place on June 23rd. So on the women's side of the competition, how exciting is this group going to the Olympics?
Oh, it's brilliant. Look, absolutely delighted. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Obviously, the men have been to the Olympics before in Tokyo, probably didn't do themselves justice, you know, but for this women's team, you know, we've been trying. It was their third cycle of trying. Obviously, unfortunately, failed for Rio in 2016 and Tokyo then 2021. So for this team to qualify and qualify a year out in advance was massive. They had a phenomenal season last year in the World Series, and this year been a little bit up and down, but this team has massive potential, obviously, with the core stalwarts like Lucy Mahal-Rock and Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe and Stacey Flood, but then they've such exciting youngsters coming through as well, and massive opportunity here too. Probably slightly harder to get a medal, but I definitely still think it's within our grasp.
Is it the perfect balance between that experienced core group and indeed a couple of new young guns?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, both men's and women's teams have been rocked by a couple of injuries in the last couple of weeks in particular, ruling one or two players out. But yeah, it's just given opportunities for these younger players, and both teams, because they qualified for the Olympics almost a year out, that they were able to try and improve their depth and bring about these younger squad players, and some of them have impressed so much that they're now going to the Olympics, which is incredible.
One player I did mention missed out, double All-Ireland winner Vicky Wall, who made a switch from AFLW to try her hand at rugby in September of last year. Is it a surprise she wasn't included?
Look, it was something that was always going to be incredibly difficult for her to try and get to the standard required in less than a year for this team. She obviously showed massive potential and they thought that they'd be able to get her to a level that was required, but unfortunately she's probably just fallen short of that. Having watched obviously the last couple of tournaments, probably not as much of shock as it might be to some others, purely just based on team selection and minutes played and all the rest. But it's unfortunate, you know, it was an opportunity that she took, you know, to potentially go to the Olympics. I don't think anybody would begrudge her for passing that up, but it unfortunately hasn't worked out for her. And, you know, that is a pity, but I suppose it's very much risk-reward, so you're not guaranteed anything. You know, she'll have learned so much from this year, you know, and obviously she'll be backing her teammates to the hilt, you know, and cheering them on in Paris.
Well, here's hoping for a big summer for both the men's and women's sevens team, and indeed for the Irish men's 15s side heading down to South Africa. For now, Hannah Tyrrell, thank you so much for taking the call here on Game On this evening.
Game On.
Football.
Now, two-time Olympian Andrew Bree is standing by to chat swimming, but before we cross to Andrew Conan, you are still with us. You've been keeping an eye on Turkey, Georgia. It is into injury time, 91st minute, 96, due to be played. Still 2-1, decent match as we were describing. How's the past 10, 15 minutes gone?
Yeah, it's fine. Shane, it looks like Arda Güler, the 19-year-old, was going to have the match winner with that wonderful strike from all of 26 metres out.
To be precise.
Came off to a wonderful ovation from the fans in the 79th minute. And his replacement probably should have scored in the 85th minute. Youssef Yassisi got on the end of a wonderful cross to the back post and he put a bullet header in. But like we talked about already, the Valencia goalkeeper, Mamardashvili, made a wonderful stop. But the game has been absolutely superb. Over 32 shots in the game, 11 on target, 3 goals. Two of them will definitely be in the collection for goal of the tournament at the end. Turkey were my dark horses. I was speaking to Marie last week about it and hoping they put it up to Portugal in this group.
Well, speaking of Portugal, are you expecting them to get over the line against Czech Republic this evening and indeed looking forward to seeing them play?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Czech Republic, they're the youngest squad in the whole competition, 25.3 years old. And I think with Portugal, with the experience that they have, the players that they have, the ability within the group, I think the only problem that they'll have is Roberto Martinez team selection and the eyebrows raised from the people that aren't playing perhaps. So I think that'll be the challenge for him to in terms of trying to organise that side. But Portugal would be my outright winners of the whole tournament. I think they've just everything from goalkeeper to attack. They've numerous positions that any other nation would like to have. So yeah, I can see a Portugal comfortable victory this evening.
Okay, great stuff, Conan. We'll let you go. Thank you so much for your company this evening. Just on Football League of Ireland transfer news, Shelburne have announced another signing. Sam Bohn, subject to international clearance, of course, was with Rovers, Dundalk and Pats previously and most recently with Maidstone United in England, in the fifth tier of England as well. So Sam Bohn joins. Conan was mentioning about getting defensive games. Conan, before you go, I'm sorry, I might just keep you here. We might keep you here. I will chat to Andrew, but George have nearly equalised. There's heads in hands of Willie Sagnol and the Georgian management on the sideline. Talk us through it. Was it a header on a half sod, I think?
It was a half volley. It came in. It's an absolute sitter. It really is. It was the ball was worked down the left hand side, and it was crossed in, and the Turkish midfielder, like who we talked about before, who got on the end, who hit the bar earlier on, Kokarashvili, had an unbelievable chance to level the game in the 94th minute, and he's put it wide.
Oh, it's all happening. It's all happening. Whoever we are chatting, swimming, Conan, you're sticking around. There's 4 minutes left in that one. Andrew, thank you so much for your patience, first and foremost. Andrew Free, two-time Olympian. It's all happening in Belgrade as well. Claire Cryan finished 11th in her 1 metre springboard final with 180 points. She returns on Friday for the 3 metre springboard. However, in the pool as well, there's been good news. Talk to me first and foremost. Shane Ryan, a new Irish record through to the final, and John Short, just 17 years old as well, secures a final placing in their respective events, Andrew.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic night. We had Dara Green up first in the semi-final, the breaststroke. Niamh Coyne followed him straight after. They didn't advance into the big final. Dara Green, it was his final, and Niamh didn't get into that big final. But Shane Ryan, 30 years old, the big man, he's just been getting faster. That's his fastest time now. Unfortunately, he was just outside the Irish qualifying time, the Olympic qualifying time, by 0.05 of a second. He was 48.39, and the Irish Olympic time, 48.34. So, look, he's into the final tomorrow night. It's a big final. The world record holder, David Popovici, is in there. So, look, it's the same standard. Is it just me, or is there just a wave of European sport going through with the athletics, the swimming, the football's on? It's just been an exciting time. But Shane is definitely leading us into that big final tomorrow night. And then, of course, on the other side of things, John Short, the young man, as I was speaking to one of his coaches tonight, and Dean Yule, and she said, I don't think he's ever swam in an outdoor pool. So it's going to be good for him on that backstroke. He's improving, and just a real good wave of Irish swimming coming through. And of course, there's only weeks to go until Paris.
I'm going to have to pick Conan Byrne off the ground here, and we will get him to describe a chance shortly, but we're going to stick with swimming just for the moment, Conan and Andrew. On John Short, as you mentioned, only 17 years of age, and you're talking about Shane Ryan getting almost better with age, and it's brilliant to see him smash a new Irish record, and unfortunately just outside that all-important time. But for John Short, how exciting of a prospect is the young man?
I've seen him years ago, you know. I talked to him years ago when he was coming through, and he had a great race at the Irish Olympic Trials, and the first thing he said to me out of the water was like, I'm sorry, I've tried my best. And I was like, man, come on, that was just fantastic swim, and such a young talent. Is really impressive in his 200. He swam a heat time 1:59, swam a good time semi-final there. He holds the Irish record for that 200-metre backstroke. And, yeah, just an exceptional talent, a really promising, bright future for Irish swimming with John, and real, you know, met his dad, real cool guy, and taking it all in his stride. So big outlook for him coming into, you know, the next cycle of swimming 4 years in towards LA. But, it's great. Look, we've got relays in finals. We had the 4x2 guys last night. Another wave of young swimmers there, rising stars, you know, within the system, and it's all been very impressive. And you know, they're battling the opposite of us over here with temperatures. They're up at about 33, 34, and we're battling some winter. I had two hoodies on today. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. but it's good. It's not easy racing outdoors for most of those swimmers. They do train indoors, so it's good. It's good. Look, there's a good energy. You can feel it. Been watching them. Dara and his breaststroke was getting faster every single round, which is great. And then we have a stack of swimmers racing in Rome this week, and they're all flying out tomorrow. A lot of them that have already qualified, you know, Elm Walsh and stuff. So, yeah, it's good. It's good. Good energy.
Final one for you, I suppose, a double-pronged question. The mixed medley finally mentioned Dara Green alongside Lottie Cullen, Max McCusker, Ellie McCartney as well. What should we be expecting from that? And also then, who should we be keeping an eye on for, I suppose, in general now, looking ahead at Rome?
Yeah, Lottie Cullen's come through really nice there. You know, it's her first Irish swim cap. You know, it's just the first time she's rocked her Irish swim cap on the international stage. She advanced to the semi-final 200 backstroke, and then within that relay, it's going to be good. She should get close to her best. You know, 60 point something seconds. She just it's about a second off the Irish, or you know, kind of Olympic time. If they can get into that final, you know, as Nathan Whiffen said, if you're in the final, if you've got a lane, there's any chance. It'd be good to get them close to, you know, third, fourth, fifth in that final. And, yes, Corby's coming through nicely. You know, he recently made a move. He was in Limerick. He's now in Dublin, and it's working out for him. And, yeah, just impressive. There is a real wave of young rising stars coming through. You know, it's a good future outlook for Irish swimming. Cormann Rinn as well made his international debut. And, you know, he was expressing his honour and pride as explaining a massive step up and an honour to be there. So, look, all these swimmers are, they're all coming along. And, of course, it's every swimmer's, not dream, it's every swimmer's goal to improve, and then obviously to learn from previous races. So hopefully they've all studied their heat swims, and if we can squeeze an extra in the world of swimming, squeezing an extra 0.5 of a second makes a lot of a difference.
That's all of the fine margins. Listen, Andrew, you're a gentleman. Thanks so much for taking the call. We'll check in with you again during the week, and no doubt we'll be hitting you up during the Olympics as well. Final word to Conan Byrne. Conan, it is finished Turkey 3, Georgia 1, when perhaps it should have finished 2-2.
An unbelievable end to the game, Shane. So very, very quickly, they had a ball into the box, and it was one of those ones that the in-swingers that beats everybody, including the goalkeeper, comes back off the post, goalkeeper's on the ground. Lokiashvili has the simple task of putting into an empty net, and Koku, the Benfica midfielder, throws his head at it, goes out for a corner. Goalkeeper Gunnock, who I criticised for his earlier concession of the goal, makes a clearance, and a little mishap in the Georgian defence where he's trying to put up the pitch, gets blocked down, and Akhtar Koglu runs 60 yards and puts it into an empty net. 3-1 Turkey.
Football, bloody hell. Conan Byrne, we got full value out of you this
evening.
Sweating. I'll let you go, cool down. Thank you so much for joining us. Just before we go, time to announce the winner of our Sure competition. The answer was, of course, Kylian Mbappe, and the winner of the 55-inch LG TV, all thanks to Sure, official partner of UEFA Euro 2024, is Luke Ryan from County Wicklow. Congratulations to Luke. And the good news for everyone else is there's another chance to win happening again on tomorrow's show. Big thanks to Ronan and Laura Lee for working on this evening's show. Bena da Silva is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. We will chat to you again at 6 p.m. tomorrow here on Game On. So for now, from all of the team, it is bye-bye.
RTE 2FM.